Join us for the Sharks NHL Draft Party on June 28th at 3 p.m. Witness the Sharks select number one overall for the first time in franchise history and celebrate the team's future with fellow Sharks fans. Don't miss out on experiencing this historic event with an electrifying atmosphere at SAP Center by securing your tickets today at sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal. That's sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal.
Hello, 1991 Club. I'm Drew Romenda, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to Teammates, a brand new feature exclusively for you. We're going to talk with great players, great friends, and inseparable teammates over the next 30 minutes, members of the Sharks family that had lasting effects that helped shape the culture of the team, and they did it together. For our inaugural teammates, we have the privilege of talking to Gary Suter and Tony Granato. Tony is now the head coach of the University of Wisconsin Badgers. That's his alma mater. He's a veteran of over 700 NHL games, and he joined the Sharks in the 1996-97 season. Tony was an important influence on and off the ice, leading the team to playoff appearances in four of his five seasons with the team. Gary Suter, well, he was a Calder Trophy winner when he broke into the league from Wisconsin with the Calgary Flames in the 1985-86 season. 15 seasons and a Stanley Cup championship later, Gary joined his good friend, Tony Granato, with the San Jose Sharks. He was another important NHL veteran brought into San Jose to change the culture and make the Sharks a playoff contender. Please enjoy our inaugural teammates.
Well, there couldn't be two better guys to talk to as far as we're talking about teammates and friends. You two guys go back a long way. Tony Granato, Gary Suter. Great to see you guys. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you, Drew. Great to be here. Great to see you as well.
Yeah, Drew. Thanks a lot. Great to see you. Go Sharks.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I want to go way back. You're both about 16 years old and 1980 Miracle on Ice. How much, and Gary, we'll start with you because Bob, your brother, was on that team. Well, I don't know why I'm telling you that. You already knew that. How much of an influence, how much of an inspiration is that for you?
Well, I think it was huge, not only for me, but for all American kids. If you go back to 1980, there wasn't many Americans in the NHL. You know, it was like, you're from Canada. There wasn't even a lot of European players back then. Yep. It's like the U.S. wasn't considered good enough. And then when in 1980, when they won the gold medal and beat all those great teams, that gave Americans a chance to play in the league and open the door for what became, you know, an American wave. Not that the Americans have taken over by any means, but they're producing a lot more players that can play in the league.
Tony, you are a part of the legacy of U.S. family involved in hockey at so many different levels. So for you, what did it mean?
Well, the same Gary just said, like I was a young kid in Chicago. And as an American player, you thought the ceiling might be maybe to play college hockey, but I really didn't have a whole lot of hope that you could play NHL hockey. And that 80 team and Bobby, Gary's brother, Mark Johnson, Ruzioni, Craig, I could name all those players because they were an inspiration to me, not just because they won, but because of how they got there and what they did. And obviously, they had all gone through colleges. And so now we said, okay, well, geez, I'm 16, a couple years away from college. Maybe I, you know, could fortunately or hopefully someday play college hockey. Unfortunately, that did work out. And then that's where Gary and I became teammates at the University of Wisconsin. But the impact that those guys had on me, I used to play Stan Mikita and Bobby Hall. Those were my idols. And that's who I used to play, you know, they were. And then all of a sudden that team wins. And now I became Mark Johnson, Bobby Suter, and the rest of those guys. So that was a really impactful moment, like Suit said, not just for ourselves, but for USA Hockey.
Hey, you mentioned Wisconsin, where you guys were teammates. But did you come across each other, cross each other's paths or anything before that? Did you hear about each other? Did you know about each other?
I'll start, Suits, because I used to drive up from Chicago to play the Madison Capitals and Suits' team when we used to be on the short end of a lot of them. So I knew the Suter family and I knew Gary was coming along. So we played against each other a lot. Just in tournaments, usually a couple times a year, we come up to Madison. And so I knew who the Suter family was really early.
Suits?
Yeah, me and Tony met in 1984, and Tony tells the story, but we were the only two freshmen coming in that year in 84, and they had, the year before, they had just won a national championship at Wisconsin. They had players like Bruce Driver, Chelios, Flatley, Mark Barron, several guys that went on to play in the NHL, and some seniors that they lost off that team, and they were a powerhouse, and somehow me and Tony were the only two coming in the next year. We had big shoes to fill, but that started a friendship with me and Tony that has lasted 38 years now, and it was incredible. Our playing careers, we started together in 84, and then we wound things down with the Sharks in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I can say, you know, as teammates, me and Tony have been friends forever, but when you play the game and then when you leave the game, there's some guys that you stay connected to and, you know, talk quite a bit for a while. But as life goes on, everyone has their own stuff going and you kind of lose touch. But me and Tony, I mean, he's probably the guy that I've stayed in touch with the most for sure.
So have you ever just sat back in your quiet times to just analyze why you connected the way you did? It couldn't have just been because you were on the same team, because you just mentioned in life we go our ways. Why was your connection so deep, so strong?
I'll jump, Suits. Sorry, man, I'm gonna cut in on you. But I just think the important thing for me, you know, and this is probably something that my dad taught me. You choose your friends, you know, wisely, and make sure you choose people that you want to be around for a long time. And Suits, for me, when we became teammates here at the University of Wisconsin, he was an undersized defenseman, but his competitiveness and his work ethic and his humbleness are kind of what all the Suitors are all about. And I really respected that, and I admired it. And in some ways, I wanted to be like Gary. And so that admiration, his work ethic and his ability to understand that hockey's a game, it's fun, and I want to be part of something bigger than just, you know, being a hockey player. So his ability as a teammate to understand that the most important thing for Gary was to do everything right to help his team out. The most unselfish player that I can say that and say that with, and I'm knowing that lots of his other teammates are saying that he's the most unselfish teammate that I played with. And to have that type of admiration for a friend and then be able to work out, push each other, and then play together and go through the same experiences together has really been special. So I'm grateful for it. I'm glad we're still somewhat in the same town, so we get to see each other quite a bit. Since Gary spends a lot of time in Madison. So we're, you know, we still feel like we're teammates. I know we tried playing a game a couple years ago. We think we still could play, but that might've been the last time we got on the ice together was just a couple years ago in a charity game. I think that was the grand finale.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to that. Suits, why have you and Tony remained close friends, not only from teammates and not only playing days, but till right now?
Well, I just think we respected each other right from the start. Like I said, we were the only two freshmen coming in trying to carry the torch of Wisconsin hockey that had just won a national championship back in 83. So we had that special bond right away. And somehow there's a saying that opposites sometimes attract. So when I was pretty young and immature and wild at Wisconsin, and Tony was always setting the example, straight laced, by the book, always looked nice, drove around a fancy car, and I was just kind of hillbilly from the east side of town. But we always had a lot of respect. And, you know, when our careers went on, we ended up playing against each other when he was with the Rangers and Kings. And then I was, you know, very excited to be able to play with an old buddy with the Sharks for the last few years of our career. So it really tied up our careers nicely.
Okay.
I'll jump in on that, Drew, real quick, because we were a little bit opposites off the ice in some ways, because, you know, he's a farmer. A hunter / outdoorsman, where I'm not.
Yeah.
But on the ice and how we played the game, I think was similar. Like, I think that the competitiveness part of it, and the kind of the pride and being an American part of it and that kind of thing. There was a lot of similarities and respect there. And like when we trained together in the summer, we'd push each other beyond levels that I ever thought I could get to. I never thought I could train that hard until I started training with Suits. And then, you know, Suits said we played against each other a lot. Those were games, like the respect for one another was unbelievable, but we played against each other hard. Right, Suits?
Yeah, I remember in L.A., I was with Calgary. Tony stole the puck from me and scored in overtime in the playoffs.
That's not what I'm talking about. But we competed against each other. We finished our checks, because we would want each other to do that. And that was the cool part about it, too. And then we'd always go out after and see each other and laugh about it. But it was competitive.
I was just going to ask that. When you guys went against each other, and I was in Calgary at those times when you were in L.A.
You remember that goal?
Yeah, I do remember that goal.
God darn it. Tony picked it up. I threw it off someone's skate. I don't know if you scored, Tony, or someone that picked the puck up. Breakaway score in L.A. Nightmare.
Can't remember here.
Yeah.
You don't remember that goal? Overtime goal?
Yes, he does. But I want to go back to what you talked about, Tony, with your training. You two guys were insane when it came to physical fitness. You were in shape. I remember, Gary, you riding the bike without sitting down on the bike. I remember, Tony, the work that you put in day after day in there when we were able to walk through. You talk about pushing each other. Who inspired each other? Who was the one that said, okay, we're going for the workout? Or who pushed first?
Well, I think we just naturally pushed each other. I mean, I always had this work ethic in my mind that if I was equal with somebody in talent, I was going to outwork them. I think that's why I had success in my career. If you're even with someone in talent, but you outwork them, you're going to have the edge. And I wasn't trying to outwork Tony. That was just the philosophy I had with playing against, just trying to play in the league.
When you played against each other, you talk about going out afterward. Did you talk to each other beforehand? But, we're going to talk about Daryl Sutter in a while. Daryl and the brothers never talked to each other before a game or after a game. They were Sutters. But before games, things like that, did you guys get together?
I think we check in and say Suits.
That's 40 years ago. I remember that goal, but I don't remember this one. This yeah, I don't know if we did or not. When Tony was with the Rangers and Calgary would be in and out.
Yeah.
I don't know if things worked out for sure, but we weren't like Daryl. Daryl freaking benched me one time for talking to Chelios on the ice.
Daryl didn't like you having friends on the other team. That didn't sit well with him.
Well, we're going to get to Daryl in a minute. But let's talk about getting to San Jose. You guys play against each other all those years, and then you reconnect in San Jose. Tony, you were here first, is that, or it came at the same time?
One year before.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'll just tell really quick, this is an easy one, because for me, this is when Dean Lombardi was trying to make a change and transition a younger team to bring in some older players to work with those younger players and to kind of build something with some older players setting the example for the young guys. So I came first, and then the next summer, Dean called me in the office and said, hey, we got a chance to sign one of these two defensemen. Who do I sign? And Suits was one of them. I said, Dean, come on, tell me you're not being serious. If you're going to compare Suits to the other guy. I said, I won't say the other guy's name because he was a great player and he certainly would have been a nice fit in Wisconsin. But I said, Dean, stop. Don't even tell me that you're going to decide between one or the other. That's the guy you got to get. He would be the perfect example for what young players. And we had Rathje, Sikora. We had a couple other young defensemen.
Crazy, yeah, yeah.
And that we were trying to show how to be a good pro. And I said, Dean, stop. Do whatever you can to sign Suits. And so I feel like I had a little bit of part on helping, you know, that happen. And then once he got here, he came and he was kind of banged up because he had some injuries that he had from Chicago. It kind of took him a while to get in there in the lineup and be part of it. But again, what I say about Suits is every teammate that would have ever played with him would have respected him for his professionalism, his work ethic, his selflessness, his team first mentality. And I'm telling you right now, you can talk to Patty Marleau, you can talk to all the young guys that I just mentioned, Friesen and all the other players. They will tell you that they did not learn more from any other player that they played with throughout their careers than the guy that's sitting on the screen here. So that's what I knew he would bring to the table. So I can proudly call Dean Lombardi today and say, Dean, I told you so. I was right. And he would definitely agree with me.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But so Gary, signing with San Jose, was it easier because you had your friend there, you had Tony there, you had a guy you're going to be teammates with again? Did it make it easier, but certainly open the door a little bit more?
Yeah, it was an exciting time for me because San Jose wanted me back then. I was a free agent, but they traded for my rights the day before so they could sign me before I became a free agent. And certainly having Tony there was a huge factor. And, you know, Daryl, I knew so well from playing in Chicago, and, you know, Daryl wanted me out there too. And if you remember Bernie Nichols, I loved playing on a power play with Bernie in Chicago, and Murray Craven. And then when I got out there, Bernie and Murray only lasted, I think, part of the year there, and they got rid of them or whatever. But when I first got to San Jose, I had a staph infection in my elbow that was undetected till I got out there. I ended up only playing one game that first year, so that was pretty crushing. But to get back to your original, yeah, Tony was a big influence on why I wanted to go out there.
Didn't you adjust your contract so that Dean could sign somebody else?
Yeah, I signed this, you know, at the time was a big free agent, big time, big shot contract. And I felt so guilty that they signed this free agent and I can't play. So I tried wanted to give half the money back because I couldn't.
And NHLPA was saying no way.
Well, my agent, Don Basil, he said, you are not doing that. So he redid the contract where they freed up a bunch of money at the start, at the front end, so they could sign, I think, Jeff Norton to play because I missed the whole first year with staph infection, and my elbow and shoulder are paying the price now too for that. But
I want to talk about that because we don't understand really what you guys have to go through in order to get on the ice. And both of you had serious, serious injuries. You with the staph infection, Tony with the head. When you were going through that as a player, how lonely is that? How tough is that? Tony?
Well, it's tough. The you know, you always fear that an injury is going to end your career when you're playing. And then you always fear, like, what am I going to do when I am done playing? That's the mentality that as you get older and you deal with some injuries, you're wondering at some point it's going to end. And the more injuries you accumulate, the more you realize, Jesus, this might happen faster than I want it to. So it's a lonely feeling. Such said he spent the whole year on the sidelines. I've spent significant time with different injuries where I missed a half a season or almost, you know, three quarters of a season. And you feel helpless because you can't be out there with the guys and your buddies. And so it's the hardest time for sure as a professional athlete. And I guess the one part that you can always, you know, rely on or try to do is to show the rest of your teammates that you're doing everything you can to get back as fast as you can. So that work ethic part, you're talking about Suits on the bike and different things like that. Like the admiration that our guys would have had watching Suits, you know, be able to train and do what he could to get back. They knew they had a player that they couldn't wait to be part of their team. So I think even though it was his first year there, he immediately gained the respect from his teammates, but man, it's hard. There's no question about that.
Did you have to rely? Did you talk to each other, Suits, or in those times that, you know, did you rely on your teammate?
Well, with the injuries, Tony's was life and death when he had the brain aneurysm, and mine was just career threatening. So those are two different things there. And what he went through is a lot more serious than I would, because life is a lot more important than you're playing a game. But as far as the question, it's very difficult, especially when you go to a team and they sign you in the whole first year, you can't play. So it's very difficult because obviously when you're on the road with the guys and you're in the locker room and you're playing all the games, you fit right in. But when you're this new guy and you can't play, it makes it a lot more difficult. But I think both Tony and I when you're injured, the mindset is you're going to do anything you can to get back playing. There's no second thought about it. I mean, I never thought my career was over and my injury wasn't like Tony's, but I was going to do anything. And I just planned on coming back as soon as I could.
Let's talk about getting to San Jose. Your first impressions of coming to San Jose. Suits?
Well, when I first played against the Sharks, it was in the Cow Palace.
And yeah.
That was quite a deal there where you had to walk across the stage, if I'm remembering right.
Downstairs.
And I don't know. I liked that atmosphere. It smelled like manure in there, so I fit right in as far as growing up in Wisconsin.
Only you would remember that, Sue.
But then the Sharks was an exciting new venue. You know, the first time playing there as a visitor, the fans were great. I distinctly remember that Shark had that lights, the eyes light up and the smoke coming out of it, and you go flying around. Tony and I were famous for this. When you go out for warm-ups, you go wide open a couple hard laps. I'm surprised we didn't take more people out, because when you got to the Sharks, you come out through that smoke, you can't see nothing. People are sipping around. Oh, there goes Tony. So for me, San Jose was an incredible place for me to wind down my career. I had played 9 years in Calgary, and up there, hockey is obviously a religion. You can't get away from anything. Played 4 years in Chicago, which was fantastic because it was close to my family and my hometown. And then to play my final 4 years out in San Jose, I couldn't ask for a better place to play. The fans are great, but once the game's over, you go out in the community and you fit right in like anybody else. So it was a great place to play.
Tony?
The same. I mean, the fans, I remember the fans, the building, the ownership. I thought Mr. Gunn was just sensational. And I remember, have you ever heard of an owner go on Christmas party and dress up as Santa Claus and hand presents out to your kids? So you talk about a genuine person. I thought that, you know, to me, Mr. Gunn was a sensational, you know, owner. So I thought that was cool. Dean Lombardi, too, his sales pitch on, you know, the year before I got there, I left after the head injury in L.A. and came to San Jose. And he kind of took a risk because we weren't real sure on how I was going to, or if I was going to be able to come back and play. And Dean, you know, made a presentation. Tony, I want you to come here. I know you're not looking, you know, you look at last year's team and record. I think they were worst in the league. And he made a sales pitch. Listen, this is our plan. I need to get experienced players in here to be leaders and teach these young guys. We got some good young talent. Owen was one of them. Jeff Friesen was one of them. Patty hadn't been drafted yet, but Patty was coming. Marco Sturm was coming. There are lots of guys coming. And his you know, change in how he was going to do it by bringing in older players that you know, cared about hockey a lot and cared about, you know, helping the younger players along. And, you know, I remember him telling me one day, he said, Tony, I'm bringing you in to teach these guys. I want you to teach these guys how to take your job. That's what I'm bringing you in for. I'm going to bring you in and you're going to help them take your job someday. And I respected that. I respected the presentation. And then when you get to San Jose and you see the area and you see the school districts that you can put your kids in the community, Aldo's, they got Aldo's. Remember Aldo's, the great Italian restaurant there? I was right at
Montcalm. Still there, buddy.
Still there. I know it's still there. But just the community in itself, like Suit says, it was a phenomenal place to be a professional athlete and go into the rink every day knowing that you had tremendous support from the fans, the enthusiasm. Every game kind of seemed like a playoff game. I remember the first exhibition game, like, holy cow, these people are nuts. And that enthusiasm really was a fun way to finish, like Suits said, I finished there as well. I think it was a fun way to finish your career in a special place like San Jose.
Well, you bring up the approach to building that team and the young guys that you influenced so much. They still, when you ask them about their influences, when you get a chance to talk to them, they're not young anymore, but they talk about you guys as well. So is it just a matter of just going and setting the example, or are there times you have to take guys aside and you have to really be cognizant of the culture you're trying to leave for them and build?
Well, for me, Dean kind of had the same message. We're bringing you guys in to teach them how to be pros. And I think it was just like the work ethic, how you carry yourself, how you get ready for games, and just the experience that we had and shared. It wasn't so much as taking guys aside. For me, it was just leading by example and knowing the young guys were absorbing everything, because they were, all the guys you mentioned are just super talented, great kids. Sturm, Friesen, Jack Marlowe, Smitty.
Why Jack?
Tony started calling him Jack.
Oh, but... no, that you gave him that nickname. Suits was, that was one of Suits's responsibilities, is as new guys came in the locker room, he'd find a name, a different name for all of them. And that, yeah. So he had so, everybody.
Well, I think Jack came up because we'd tell him before the game, come on, we got to jack you up. We got to jack him up. I got to get jacked up. I got to get jacked up. So yeah. We started calling him Jack.
We still do. Still call him Jack.
Still call him Jack.
I'd never heard that one before. That's fantastic.
We call Tony David.
What?
We call Tony David.
Why?
Well, I don't know if it was David Koresh because he was like a cult leader, or David Cassidy because he was always singing in the locker room.
Dude said a combo for his name wasn't one, it was multi purpose on why he gave you a certain
dumb locker room stuff.
That's scary locker room stuff. We're going to edit this part out though. Just on time, how are you guys both doing right now?
We got a little bit more time. We're good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You're right, Suits?
Oh, God, yeah. Tony's the guy that's got to run practice.
Okay. All right, so San Jose, Daryl Sutter. We all have Daryl Sutter stories. You guys have known Daryl for a long time. Daryl has reached the height of coaching in the National Hockey League, 2 Stanley Cups with L.A. But playing for Daryl Sutter back then, Daryl was, we thought from the outside looking in, tough, hard-nosed. But he loved veteran players.
Sometimes he did. That's not true. Sometimes he loved us. Sometimes he didn't love us so much.
Well, there's sometimes he used you guys as examples, right? I mean, sometimes he went after you hard. What was the toughest thing about playing for Daryl? What was the best thing about playing for Daryl?
Suits you up.
Yeah, for me, Daryl was a hard ass.
Yeah. You know,
back in the day. And he was not easy to play for, and he pissed you off, and he was always trying to get under your skin thinking that he could get you to play harder. And I remember one game in Anaheim, we're sitting on the bench and I'm got my stick up in the air like this, the blades up, and he comes down and grabs a stick away from me and gives me another stick that said work on it, on the blade. He had written work on the blade with a Sharpie. But yeah, so he could really get under your skin and piss you off. But when you're in the moment, it really can get to you and affect you. But I think you realize as time goes on that, like, away from the game, he was excellent. And he was hard on us, almost treating us like a brother, trying to get the most out of us. And now I look back on it and I know what his intentions are, and he's just wants to win. But, and I think he's mellowed out probably from what he was like in his heyday, but he was a hard ass and demanded the most out of you. I remember in Chicago, because I played with him for 6 years, because Hartsburg took over in Chicago and Daryl went to San Jose. But remember in Chicago, like, after a loss in a visiting rink, he'd get on the bus. Like, he would always sit in that front seat, and you'd go up the stairs on the bus, and he's just staring at you, giving his Daryl head shake, you know, biting his lip. Same thing, got a penalty during a game, and you look over at the bench, he's shaking his head. So, yeah, he was hard, but what a character that he's blossomed into, and good for him winning 2 Stanley Cups and in LA, and, you know, doing a great job in Calgary. But I really enjoy him a lot more now than when you're in a battle and he's doing all his stuff on you, motivational tactics.
Tony, as a coach now, man, the way coaching is now, and now looking at how Daryl coached you, that's got to be worlds apart.
Yeah, it is. It is. But Suits is right. Like, the bottom line is, as a coach, you want to win. and you want your kids, your players, your guys, you're coaching to compete at a level and challenge them to go above and beyond even what they think they can. That's the most important thing. And I think if I think back on Daryl, yeah, there are lots of times you left the building shaking your head, thinking that the way he's doing it wasn't quite right. But at the end of the day, you think about it and you think, well, he's trying to make our team better. He was certainly trying to change the culture of what we once were in San Jose. We were, you know, like I said, the year before I got there, we were the worst team in hockey. And some of the reasons we were the worst team in hockey is we were soft and we were a little bit pampered and a little bit kind of, you know, country club-like. And that, to be honest with you, we were. And he went the opposite extreme immediately. And that was a drastic change for lots of us. You know, we thought there was potentially a little bit more gradual way to get there. So the impact that he had on the Sharks to turn them into a playoff team immediately shows that his ideas were right on why he did it. And Suits and I, we talk away from the rink and we were wondering, geez, how long are we going to be able to handle this? And, you know, he's going to drive us to retirement or drive us to quit at certain times. That's how hard he was on us. But at the end of the day, I look now as a coach and your job is to try to win. And if sometimes that's going borderline too far, you have to make a choice in a short period of time sometimes. So I respect that. I love Daryl as a person. I love how he is as a father. I love how he is as a husband. The work ethic part and who he is as a human being is sensational. I would love to give him a hug someday and laugh and tell him some of these stories we have at different times when we coached against each other a little bit when I was in Colorado. Post games, we had chances to give each other hugs and laugh a little bit about some of the old days. But at some point, there on some reunion that we'll have Scotty Emmerich organize, we'll get everything together and we'll tee up on Daryl and give it to him like he gave it to us. And then we'll all laugh and smile about. And the one person, I'm going to say this really quick to make sure we all mention Brian Marchment today because losing much this summer. Lost the kind of the connector for all of us. Like Suits and I have a tremendous relationship. We talk to each other all the time. Mush was able to keep Harv, Thordy, Reach, Nabby, Patty, all these guys inside this group texting over and over, just kept us connected. And Mush was a huge Daryl fan. Daryl was a huge Mush fan. And you know, the stories that Mush used to be able to say about, you know, the way it was, but do it in a different way than we could because of what Daryl did for Mush was really, really a special relationship between those two. And I know it's taken Daryl, it's just like it's taken us a long time to you know, get past the fact that Mush isn't here anymore. But those two were like, you know, those two were a coach, father, you talk about father, son, coach, player relationship, that one was as unique as you could ever have and as special.
Yeah, well said. Let's go to the playoffs. When you guys were with the Sharks, was upsetting St. Louis one of the bigger playoff achievements, accomplishments? I mean, that series was phenomenal. They were President's Trophy. We had gotten in on the eighth spot, so you ran up with them. And that series, was that a defining moment for that team and the culture you were trying to build?
Well, I'll go first. Remember that series. And I think we're talking about Daryl. I think he really got the most out of that group to go in there and beat St. Louis. I think it was, in game seven?
Yeah.
But I mean, he had a line of Tony, I think, yep. Dave Lowry. I don't know if Ron Sutter
Ronnie,
or Stern.
Ronnie played with that.
Ronnie Stern or Dave Lowry, us four were kind of rotating through that fourth line, dump and chase and run pronger. That was it. Don't worry. His line was Suits. Don't worry about the puck. Just run pronger. That's all I want you to do all series.
And you guys, I mean, what an effective – unit, because you guys had Pronger chasing all over the place, and he was probably the best defenseman in the game at that time, or right near the top, and guys totally had him off his game. But what a great team effort to be able to go in there and beat those guys that had just cruised, had probably the best team in the league. So huge win for the Sharks.
And one thing, Suits, I remember, we lost game 6 at home. Mm-hmm. That's when we thought we were going to win that series. We lost game 6, I think 7-1. I don't even know if we touched a puck that game. Seriously, St. Louis was so good. And then we fly to St. Louis, and we're all kind of panicking. Oh, my gosh, this run might be over. How are we going to be able to regroup and be able to bounce back and win? And Daryl, the best coaching job that Daryl did for me was before that game. Instead of screaming at everybody and trying to motivate them by you know, I don't know, whatever tactics he used, he sat down and he pointed at each one of us and said, we're going to win the game tonight. This is why. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And I said, holy cow. And he said, he thinks we can win. And we got out on the ice and we just felt loose. We felt like, man, this coach believes in us. We're going to find a way to get this done. And we did. So I'll give Daryl, that was the most, from a coaching standpoint, maybe the best coaching before a game that I've ever had as a player. So I give Daryl a ton of credit for that. And then, you know, the part that is a little bit disappointing, I think, did we go to Dallas next, Drew? We were banged up because it took a big toll going 7 of how hard we played. But we went into Dallas and kind of just were kind of satisfied with what just happened. And we didn't really I thought we could have beat Dallas. I really, really, really did. So I was a little disappointed that we didn't perform a little bit better and give ourselves a chance to make a more special run. But Dallas they were a heck of a team at that time as well. So. But a great memory, great series to be able to knock off the number one seed. And really that, I think, was the jump start, you know, for the Sharks, you know, making that 100%. Next step. So that was huge. I mean, those little wins in playoffs mean so much for Patty Marleau, for Friesen, for the young players to have to go through an experience like that so they can learn for the next time through. And I think that was really helpful.
Before I let you go, for both of you, what, from the outside looking in, don't we know about what it means to be teammates, what it means to be brothers, and the bond that goes, especially between you two when you're playing hockey together and when you did in San Jose? What don't we know?
For me, I think a good example is, unfortunately, you don't get together that often with teammates anymore. We talked earlier, everyone goes their own way in life and you have kids and you drift apart, but unfortunately, you don't get together a lot. We got together with a bunch of guys briefly at Musha's funeral this last summer up in Ontario. And it's unbelievable how you can pick right up and some of the locker room chatter and japs going back and forth. It's just like we played last year. And it's been 20 years for some of us to be together with guys. So it's just a unique atmosphere when you are a professional athlete, hockey player, and you're with the same group of 25 guys that you travel all over the country, you're with together every day. And really some of the most memorable times for any hockey player athlete, I think, are what goes on in the locker room, who's getting who stirred up, and having fun after games. And of course the game itself, but just the closeness of being a group, traveling everywhere together and being together all the time is just a amazing thing that other people that are in the real business world can never experience.
That was fantastic. So it's the other part I think that's really important for me. And I think most of the players that played is even though we're done, like Suits just said, when you go back and you see your former teammates, you want them to be able to hug you and respect you for what you were as a teammate, not what you are today, not how many goals you scored, not whatever, just, man, that son of a gun, I love competing with that guy. I love him as my teammate. And like Such said, when we lost an unbelievable teammate in Mush. And for us, you know, saying goodbye to a teammate, no, we still feel like we're young. We still, like Suits said, we still felt like someday we were going to see him again and go back in the locker room and be able to play St. Louis again or whatever. You just don't think it ends. And so to have to go through that experience, you bring back the memories of really what the people part of it is, the dynamics of the friendships, the respect that you have. Like I told, Suits played through so many darn injuries. He should have retired 5 years before he did. And he did that. And why did he do it? Because he wanted to be a great teammate. So that's what I remember about, you know, Suits. That's the Mush. And then, so those are the connections that you have with the teammates, you know, to be in that battle, to know the sacrifices that each of us made for one another and to get to where we were, to be able to play in the NHL and be part of a team. You got a mutual amount of respect for one another that I think is really cool. So I would say that might be some things that people don't really understand, that unique relationship of mutual respect for one another.
Well, this has been, guys, fantastic. Thank you so much for being the inaugural guests on our first teammates broadcast. It's been an honor to talk to you today. It was an honor to call your games, and it was a privilege to be around you all those years. And it's great to see you both doing so well. Thank you.
Appreciate those kind words, and that was fun, Drew.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Drew. It's great to see you.